Station.
Pygmalion by me, George Bernard Shaw. Episode 1.
What could he be doing all this time? He's been gone 20 minutes.
Oh, that's so long. But he ought to have got us a cab by this.
He won't get no cab till 11:30, missus, when they come back after trouble their theatre first.
Oh, but we must have a cab. We can't stand here until 11:30. Oh, it's too bad.
If Freddie had a bit of gumption, he would have got one at the theatre door. Well, haven't you got a cab?
There's not one to be had for love or money.
Oh, Freddie, there must be one. You can't have tried.
I tell you, they're all engaged. I've been to Charing Cross one way and nearly to Ludgate Circus the other, and they were all engaged.
You haven't tried at all.
You really are very helpless, Freddie. Go again and don't come back until you have found a cab.
Oh, very well. I'll go.
Oh, now then, Freddie. The way you're going, dear. There's manage for you. Two bunches of violets trodden in the mud.
How do you know that my son's name is Freddy, pray?
Ah, he's your son, is he? Well, if you'd done your duty by him as a mother should, he'd know better to spoil a poor girl's flowers and run away without paying. Will you pay for him?
Do nothing of the sort, Mother. The idea.
Please allow me, Clara. Have you any pennies?
No, I've nothing smaller than a sixpence.
I can give you change for a tenner, kind lady.
Give it to me. Now, this is for your flowers.
Thank you kindly, lady.
Now, tell me how you know that young gentleman's name.
I didn't.
I heard you call him by it. Don't try to deceive me.
Who's trying to deceive you? I called him Freddy or Charlie. Same as you might yourself if you was talking to a stranger and wished to be pleasant.
Phew!
Oh, sir. Is there any sign of it stopping?
I'm afraid not. It started worse than ever about 2 minutes ago.
Oh, dear.
If it's worse, it's a sign he's nearly over. Should cheer up, Captain, and buy a sale for poor girl.
I'm sorry, I haven't any change.
I can give you change, Captain.
For a sovereign? I've nothing less.
God! Oh, do buy a flower off me, Captain. I can change half a crown. Take this for tuppence.
Now, don't be troublesome. There's a good girl. I really haven't any change. Stop. Here's 3 halfpence, if that's any good to you.
Thank you, sir.
You be careful. Give him a flower for it. There's a bloke here behind taking down every blessed word you're saying.
I ain't done nothing wrong by speaking to the gentleman. I've a right to sell flowers if I keep off the curb. I'm a respectable girl, so help me. I never spoke to him except to ask him to buy a flower off me. So don't let him charge me. You don't know what it means to me. They'll take away my character and drive me on the streets as being to gentlemen.
There. Who's hurting you, you silly girl? What do you take me for?
It's all right. He's a gentleman. Look at his boots. She thought you was a copper's knock, sir.
What's a copper's knock?
It's a copper's knock, as you might say. What else would you call it? A sort of informer.
I'll take my Bible oath, I'll never say a word.
Shut up. Do I look like a policeman?
And what do you take down my words for? You just show me what you wrote about me. What's that? That ain't proper writing. I can't read that.
Well, I can. Cheer up, Captain, and buy a flare off a poor girl.
It's because I called him Captain. I mean no harm. Oh, sir, don't let him lay a charge against me for a word like that.
Charge? I make no charge. Really, sir, anybody could see that the girl meant no harm.
He's a blooming busybody. That's what he is, I tell you. Look at his boots.
And how are all your people down at Selsey?
Who told you my people come from Selsey?
Never you mind, they did. And how do you come to be up so far east? You were born in Lisson Grove.
Oh, what harm is there in my leaving Lisson Grove? It wasn't fit for a pig to live in, and I had to pay for it 6 a week.
Oh, live where you like, but stop that noise.
Oh, come. He can't touch you. You have a right to live where you please.
Hey, do you know where I come from?
Hoxton.
Who said I didn't? Mind me, you know everything you do.
Ain't no cool ever with me, eh? I'm a good girl, I am.
All right, what about this gentleman? Tell him where he come from if you want to go fortune telling.
Ah, well, I...
Cheltenham, Harrow, Cambridge and India.
Quite right.
He knows all about it.
Taught him proper, didn't he?
May I ask, sir, do you do this for your living at a music hall?
No, I've thought of that. Perhaps I shall someday.
What on earth is Freddy doing? I shall get pneumonia if I stay in this draught any longer.
Earl's Court.
Will you please keep your impertinent remarks to yourself?
Did I say that out loud? I didn't mean to. I beg your pardon. Your mother's Epsom, unmistakably.
How very curious. I was brought up in Large Lady Park, near Epsom.
There's no right to take away my character. My character's the same to me as any lady's.
I don't know whether you've noticed it, but the rain stopped about 2 minutes ago.
So it has. Why didn't you say so before? And us losing our time listening to your...
So long, teacher.
It's quite fine now, Clara. We can walk to a motorbus.
But the cab... Oh, how tiresome.
How do you do it, if I may ask?
Simply phonetics, the science of speech. That's my profession. Also, my hobby. Happy is the man who can make a living by his hobby. You can spot an Irishman or a Yorkshireman by his brogue. I can place any man within 6 miles. I can place him within 2 miles in London, sometimes within 2 streets.
He'd be ashamed of himself, unmanly coward.
But is there a living in that?
Oh, yes. Quite a fat one. This is an age of upstarts. Men begin in Kentish Town with £80 a year and end in Park Lane with 100,000. They want to drop Kentish Town, but they give themselves away every time they open their mouths. Now, I can teach them...
Let him mind his own business and leave a poor girl...
What? Cease this detestable boo-hooing instantly, or else seek the shelter of some other place of worship.
I've a right to be here if I like, same as you.
A woman who utters such depressing and disgusting sounds has no right to be anywhere, no right to live... Remember that you are a human being with a soul and a divine gift of articulate speech. That your native language is the language of Shakespeare and Milton and the Bible. And don't sit there crooning like a bilious pigeon. Oh, heavens, what a sound. Ow! You see this creature with her curbstone English. The English that will keep her in the gutter to the end of her days. Well, sir... In 3 months, I could pass that girl off as a duchess at an ambassador's garden party. I could even get her a place as lady's maid or shop assistant, which requires better English. That's the sort of thing I do for commercial millionaires. And on the profits of it, I do genuine scientific work in phonetics. And a little as a poet, on Miltonic lines.
Is that you say?
Yes, you squashed cabbage leaf. You disgrace to the noble architecture of Covent Garden. You incarnate insult to the English language. I could pass you off as the Queen of Sheba. Can you believe that?
Well, of course I can. I am myself a student of Indian dialects and...
Are you? Do you know Colonel Pickering, the author of Spoken Sanskrit?
I am Colonel Pickering. Who are you?
Henry Higgins, author of Higgins Universal Alphabet.
I came from India to meet you.
Well, I was going to India to meet you.
Where do you live?
27A Wimpole Street. Come and see me tomorrow.
Well, I'm at the Carlton. Come with me now and let's have a jaw over some supper.
Oh, right you are.
Bye, flower, kind gentleman. I'm sure for me lodging.
I really haven't any change. I'm sorry.
Take the old blooming basket for sixpence.
A reminder. There. Pickering.
Oh. Ah.
Got one at last. Oh, hello. But where are the two ladies that were here?
They walked to the bus when the rain stopped.
And left me with a cab on my hands. Damnation.
Never you mind, young man. I'm going home in a taxi.
Are you sure you got the fare, Judy?
Eightpence ain't no object to me, Charlie.
Right you are, then.
Goodbye, Freddy. Don't let me keep you standing there. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Where to?
Angel Court, Drury Lane, next to Mickle John's oil shop.
Mm. Right you are.
Well, I think that's the whole show.
It's really amazing. I haven't taken half of it in, you know.
Would you like to go over any of it again?
No, no, thank you. Not now. I'm quite done up for this morning. Mm. I rather fancy myself because I can pronounce 24 distinct vowel sounds, but your 130 beat me. I can't hear a bit of difference between most of them.
Oh, that comes with practice. You hear no difference at first, but you keep on listening, and presently you'll find they're all as different as A from B. What's the matter?
A young woman wants to see you, sir.
Young woman? What does she want?
Well, sir, she says you'll be glad to see her when you know what she's come about. She's quite a common girl, sir. Very common indeed. I should have sent her away, only I thought perhaps you wanted her to talk into your machines.
Has she an interesting accent?
Oh, something dreadful, sir, really. I don't know how you can take an interest in it.
Let's have her up. Show her up, Mrs. Pierce.
Very well, sir. It's for you to say.
Well, this is rather a bit of luck. I'll show you how I make records. We'll set her talking, and I'll take it down first in Bell's visible speech, then in broad Romic, and then we'll get her on the phonograph so that you can turn her on as often as you like with the written transcript before you.
This is the young woman, sir.
Why, this is the girl I jotted down last night. Oh, she's no use. I've got all the records I want of the Listen Grove lingo, and I'm not going to waste another cylinder on it. Be off with you. I don't want you.
Don't you be so saucy. You ain't heard what I come for yet. Did you tell him I come in a taxi?
Nonsense, girl. What do you think a gentleman like Mr. Higgins cares what you came in?
Oh, we are proud. He ain't above giving lessons, not him. I heard him say so. Well, I ain't come here to ask for any compliment, and if my money's not good enough, I can go elsewhere.
Good enough for what?
Good enough for you. Now you know, don't you? I'm come to have lessons, I am, and to pay for them too. Make no mistake.
Well, what do you expect me to say?
Well, if you was a gentleman, you might ask me to sit down, I think. Didn't I tell you I'm bringing you business?
Pickering, shall we ask this baggage to sit down? Or shall we throw her out of the window?
Oh! I won't be called a baggage when I've offered to pay like any lady.
What is it you want, my girl?
I want to be a lady in the flower shop instead of selling at the corner of Tottenham Court Road. But they won't take me unless I can talk more genteel. He said he could teach me. Well, here I am ready to pay him, not asking any favour, and he treats me as if I was dirt.
How can you be such a foolish, ignorant girl as to think you could afford to pay Mr. Higgins?
Why shouldn't I? I know what lessons cost as well as you do, and I'm ready to pay.
How much?
Now you're talking. I thought you'd come off it when you saw a chance of getting back a bit of what you chucked at me last night. You'd had a drop in, hadn't you?
Sit down.
Oh, if you're going to make a compliment of it...
Sit down.
Sit down, girl. Do as you're told.
No.
Won't you sit down?
Don't mind if I do.
What's your name?
Liza Doolittle.
Very well. And how much do you propose to pay me for the lessons, Liza?
Oh, I know what's right. A lady friend of mine gets French lessons for 18 pence an hour from a real French gentleman. Well, you wouldn't have the face to ask me the same for teaching me my own language as you would for French. So I won't give more than a shilling. Take it or leave it.
You know, Pickering, if you consider a shilling, not as a simple shilling, but as a percentage of this girl's income, it works out as fully equivalent to 60 or 70 pounds for a millionaire. By George, it's enormous. It's the biggest offer I ever had.
60 pounds? What are you talking about? I never offered you 60 pounds. Where would I...
Hold your tongue.
My God, 60 pounds.
Don't cry, you silly girl. Sit down. Nobody's going to touch your money.
Somebody's going to touch you with a broomstick if you don't stop snivelling and sit down.
Oh, one would think you was my father.
If I decide to teach you, I'll be worse than two fathers to you. Here.
What's this for?
To wipe your eyes. To wipe any part of your face that feels moist.
Hmm.
Remember, that's your handkerchief. That's your sleeve. Don't mistake the one for the other if you wish to become a lady in a shop.
Higgins, I'm interested. What about the ambassador's garden party? I'll say you're the greatest teacher alive if you make that good. I'll bet you all the expense of the experiment, you can't do it. And I'll pay for the lessons.
Oh, you are real good, thank you, Captain.
It's almost irresistible. She's so deliciously low. So horribly dirty.
No! I ain't dirty. I'll wash my face and hands before I come, I did.
What is life but a series of inspired follies? The difficulty is to find them to do. I shall make a duchess of this draggle-tailed guffersnipe.
No!
Yes, in 6 months, in three, if she has a good ear and a quick tongue, I'll take her anywhere and pass her off as anything. We'll start today. Now, this moment, take her away and clean her, Mrs. Pierce. Monkey brand if it won't come off any other way. Is there a good fire in the kitchen?
Yes, but
well, take all her clothes off and burn them. Ring up Whiteley or somebody for new ones. Wrap her up in brown paper till they come.
You're no gentleman, you're not, to talk of such things. I'm a good girl, I am, and I know what the like of you are, I do.
Well, we want none of your Listengrove prudery here, young woman. You've got to learn to behave like a duchess. Take it away, Mrs. Pierce. If she gives you any trouble, wallop her.
No, I'll call the police, I will.
But I've no place to put her.
Yeah, put her in the dustbin.
No!
Oh, come, Higgins, be reasonable.
You must be reasonable, Mr. Higgins. Really, you must. You can't walk over everybody like this.
I walk over everybody? My dear Mrs. Pierce, my dear Pickering, I never had the slightest intention of walking over anyone. All I propose is that we should be kind to this poor girl. We must help her to prepare and fit herself for her new station in life.
Sir, you can't take a girl up like that, as if you were picking up a pebble on a beach.
Why not?
Why not? But you don't know anything about her. Oh, what about her parents? She may be married.
Gone!
Yeah, as the girl very properly says, gone! Don't you know that a woman of that class looks a worn-out drudge of 50 a year after she's married?
Who'd marry me?
By George, Eliza, the streets will be strewn with the bodies of men shooting themselves for your sake before I've done with you.
Nonsense, sir. You mustn't talk like that to her.
I'm going away. He's off his chump, he is. I don't want no barmies teaching me.
Oh, indeed. I'm mad, am I? Very well, Mrs. Pierce. You needn't order the new clothes for her. Throw her out.
Come along.
No! You've got no right to touch me.
You see now what comes of being saucy. This way, please.
Well, I didn't want no clothes. I wouldn't have taken them. I can buy me own clothes.
You're an ungrateful, wicked girl. This is my return for offering to take you out of the gutter and dress you beautifully and make a lady of you.
Stop, Mr. Higgins. I won't allow it. It's you that are wicked.
No.
Go home to your parents, girl, and tell them to take better care of you.
I ain't got no parents. They told me I was big enough to earn my own living and turned me out.
Well, where's your mother?
I ain't got no mother. Her that turned me out was my sixth stepmother, but I done without them, and I'm a good girl, I am.
Very well, then. What on earth is all this fuss about? The girl doesn't belong to anybody, is no use to anybody but me.
But what's to become of her? Is she to be paid anything? Oh, do be sensible, sir.
She'll have her food and her clothes. She'll only drink if you give her money.
Oh, you are a brute. It's a lie. Nobody ever saw the sign of liquor on me.
Does it occur to you, Higgins, that the girl has some feelings?
Oh, no. I don't think so. Not any feelings that we need bother about. Have you, Eliza?
Oh, you've no feeling heart in you. You don't care for nothing but yourself. Here, I've had enough of this. I'm going.
Have some chocolates, Eliza.
How do I know what might be in them? I've heard of girls being drugged by the like of you.
Pledge of good faith, Eliza. I eat one half. You eat the other. You shall have boxes of them. Barrels of them every day. You shall live on them.
Huh? I wouldn't have ate it, only I'm too late and like to take it out of my mouth.
Listen, Eliza, I think you said you came in a taxi.
What if I did? I've as good a right to take taxis as anyone else.
Oh, you have, Eliza. And in future you shall have as many taxis as you want. You shall go up and down and round the town in a taxi every day. Think of that, Eliza.
Mr. Higgins, you're tempting the girl. It's not right.
And you shall marry an officer in the Guards with a beautiful moustache, the son of a marquis who will disinherit...
Excuse me, Higgins, but Mrs. Pierce is quite right. If this girl is to put herself in your hands for 6 months for an experiment in teaching, she must understand thoroughly what she's doing.
Well, how can she? She's incapable of understanding anything. Besides, do any of us understand what we're doing? If we did, would we ever do it?
Very clever, Higgins, but not sound sense. Miss Doolittle.
No!
There. That's all you'll get out of Eliza. No! No use explaining. As a military man, you ought to know that. Give her her orders. That's what she wants. Eliza, you are to live here for the next 6 months, learning how to speak beautifully, like a lady in a florist's shop. If you're good and do whatever you're told, you shall sleep in a proper bedroom and have lots to eat and money to buy chocolates and take rides in taxis. If you're naughty and idle, you will sleep in the back kitchen among the black beetles and be walloped by Mrs. Pierce with a broomstick. At the end of 6 months, you shall go to Buckingham Palace in a carriage, beautifully dressed. If the king finds out that you're not a lady, you'll be taken by the police to the Tower of London, where your head will be cut off as a warning to other presumptuous flower girls. If you are not found out, you shall have a present of 7 and 6 pence to start life with as a lady in a shop. If you refuse this offer, you will be a most ungrateful, wicked girl, and the angels will weep for you. Now are you satisfied, Pickering? Can I put it more plainly and fairly? Mrs. Pierce.
I think you better let me speak to the girl properly in private. Come with me, Eliza.
Thank you, Mrs. Pierce. Bundle her off to the bathroom.
You're a great bully, you are. I won't stay here if I don't like. I won't let nobody wallop me. I never asked to go to Buckingham Palace, so I didn't. I was never in trouble with the police, not me. I'm a good girl.
Don't answer back, girl. You don't understand the gentleman. Come with me.
Well, what I say is right. I won't go near the king, not if I'm going to have my head cut off. If I'd known what I was here myself in for, I wouldn't have come here. Girl, and I never offered to say a word to him, and I don't owe him nothing, and I don't care, and I won't be put upon, and I have me feelings the same as anyone else.
I will have to put you in here. This will be your bedroom.
Oh, I couldn't sleep here, missus. It's too good for the likes of me. I should be afraid to touch anything. I ain't a duchess yet, you know.
You have got to make yourself as clean as the room. Then you won't be afraid of it. And you must call me Mrs. Pierce, not Mrs.
Oh, what's this? Is this where you wash clothes? Funny sort of copper, I call it.
It's not a copper. This is where we wash ourselves, Eliza. And where I'm going to wash you.
You expect me to get into that and wet myself all over? Not me. I should catch my death. I knew a woman did it every Saturday night, and she died of it.
Mr. Higgins has the gentleman's bathroom downstairs, and he has a bath every morning in cold water.
Oh, he's made of iron, that man.
If you are to sit with him and the Colonel and be taught, you will have to do the same. They won't like the smell of you if you don't. But you can have the water as hot as you like. There are two taps, hot and cold.
I couldn't. I dursn't. It's not natural. It'll kill me. I've never had a bath in my life, nor will you call a proper one.
But don't you want to be clean and sweet and decent like a lady? You know you can't be a nice girl inside if you're a dirty slut outside. Oh, now stop crying and go back into your room and take off all your clothes. Then wrap yourself in this and come back to me. I will get the bath ready.
Oh, come on. I won't. I'm not used to it. I've never took off all my clothes before. It's not right. It's not decent.
Nonsense, child. Don't you take off all your clothes every night when you go to bed?
No. Why should I? I should catch my death. Of course I take off my skirt.
Do you mean that you sleep in the underclothes you wear in the daytime?
What else have I to sleep in?
You will never do that again as long as you live here. I will get you a proper night dress.
Do you mean change into cold things and lie awake shivering all night? You want to kill me, you do. You don't know what a cold is to me. You don't know how I dread it.
Your bed won't be cold here. I will put a hot water bottle into it. Off with you and undress.
Oh, if only I'd known what a dreadful thing it is to be cleaned up every cup. I don't know when I was well off.
Now come along. Take that thing off.
Oh, I couldn't, Mrs. Pierce, really, I couldn't. I've never done such a thing.
Nonsense. Here, step in and tell me whether it's hot enough for you.
Oh, it was too hot.
Oh, it won't hurt. Oh. There, you see how much better that feels.
It's horrible. No, Walter,
it feels like to be a horse.
Excuse the straight question, Higgins. Are you a man of good character where women are concerned?
Have you ever met a man of good character where women are concerned?
Yes, very frequently.
Well, I haven't. I find that the moment I let a woman make friends with me, she becomes jealous, exacting, suspicious, and a damn nuisance. I find that the moment I let myself make friends with a woman, I become selfish and tyrannical. Women upset everything. So here I am, a confirmed old bachelor, and likely to remain so. When you let a woman in your life...
Higgins, you know what I mean. If I'm to be in this business, I shall feel responsible for that girl. I hope it's understood that no advantage is to be taken of her position.
What? That thing? Oh, sacred. I assure you. You see, she'll be a pupil, and teaching would be impossible unless pupils were sacred. I've taught scores of American millionairesses how to speak English, the best-looking women in the world. I'm seasoned. They might as well be blocks of wood. I might as well be a block of wood. No, it's really... Well, Mrs. Pierce, is it all right?
I just wish to trouble you with a word, if I may, Mr. Higgins.
Yes, yeah, certainly. Come in.
Am I on the way?
Not at all, sir. Mr. Higgins, will you please be very particular what you say before the girl?
Well, of course. I'm always particular about what I say. Why do you say this to me?
No, sir, you're not at all particular when you've mislaid anything or when you get a little impatient. Now, it doesn't matter before me. I'm used to it. But you really must not swear before the girl.
I swear? I never swear. I detest the habit. What the devil do you mean?
That's what I mean, sir. You swear a great deal too much. Now, I don't mind you damning and blasting. And what the devil? And where the devil? And who the devil?
Really, Mrs. Pierce, this language from your lips.
But there is a certain word I must ask you not to use. Mm. The girl used it herself because the bath was too hot. It begins with the same letter as bath. Now, she knows no better. She learnt it at her mother's knee. But she must not hear it from your lips.
I cannot charge myself with having ever uttered it, Mrs. Pierce. Except perhaps in a moment of extreme, unjustifiable excitement.
Only this morning, sir, you applied it to your boots, to the butter and to the brown bread.
This is a mere alliteration, Mrs. Pierce. Natural to a poet.
Well, sir, whatever you choose to call it, I beg you not to let the girl hear you repeat it.
Oh, very well, very well. Is that all?
No, sir. We shall have to be very particular with this girl as to personal cleanliness.
Yeah, certainly. Quite right. Most important.
I mean not to be slovenly about her dress or untidy in leaving things about.
Yes, just so. I intended to call your attention to that. It is these little things that matter, Pickering.
Yes, sir. Then might I ask you not to come down to breakfast in your dressing gown, or at any rate, not to use it as a napkin to the extent you do, sir. And if you would be so good as to not eat everything off the same plate, and to remember not to put the porridge saucepan out of your hand on the clean tablecloth. It would be a better example to the girl. You know you nearly choked yourself with a fishbone in the jam only last week.
You're quite right, Mrs. Pierce. I shall be particularly careful before the girl. Is that all?
No, sir. Might she use some of those Japanese dresses you bought from abroad? I really can't put her back in her old things.
Certainly. Anything you like. Is that all?
Thank you, sir. That's all.
You know, Pickering, that woman has the most extraordinary ideas about me. I mean, here I am, a shy, diffident sort of man, and yet she is firmly persuaded that I'm an arbitrary, overbearing, bossing kind of person. I can't account for it.
If you please, sir, the trouble's beginning already. There's a dustman downstairs. Alfred Doolittle wants to see you. He says you have his daughter here.
I say.
Send the blaggard up.
Very well, sir.
He may not be a blaggard, Higgins.
Nonsense, of course he's a blaggard.
Well, whether he is or not, I'm afraid we shall have some trouble with him.
Oh, no, I think not. If there's any trouble, he shall have it with me, not I with him. And we're sure to get something interesting out of him.
About the girl?
No, I mean his dialect.
Oh.
Doolittle, sir.
Professor Higgins?
Here. Good morning. Sit down.
Morning, Governor.
Morning.
Gentlemen, I come about a very serious matter.
Brought up in Hounslow, mother Welsh, I should think. What do you want, Doolittle?
I want my daughter. That's what I want. See?
Well, of course you do. You're her father, aren't you? I'm glad to see you have some spark of family feeling left. She's upstairs. Take her away at once.
What?
Take her away. Do you suppose I'm going to keep your daughter for you?
Now, look here, Governor. Is this reasonable? Is it fair to take advantage of a man like this? The girl belongs to me. You got her. Where do I come in?
Your daughter had the audacity to come to my house and ask me to teach her how to speak properly so that she could get a place in a flower shop. This gentleman and my housekeeper have been here all the time. How dare you come here and attempt to blackmail me? You sent her here on purpose.
No, Governor.
This is a plant. A plot to extort money by threats. I shall telephone for the police.
Have I asked you for a brass farthing? I'll leave it to the gentleman here. Have I said a word about money?
And what else did you come for?
I'll tell you, Governor, if you'll only let me get a word in. I'm willing to tell you. I'm wanting to tell you. I'm waiting to tell you.
Pickering, this chap has a certain natural gift of rhetoric. Observe the rhythm of his native woodnotes wild. I'm willing to tell you. I'm wanting to tell you. I'm waiting to tell you. Sentimental rhetoric. That's the Welsh strain in him. It also accounts for his mendacity and dishonesty.
Oh, please, Higgins. I'm West Country myself. How did you know the girl was here if you didn't send her?
It was like this, Governor. The girl took a boy in a taxi to give him a jaunt. Son of her landlady, he is. He hung about on a chance of her giving him another ride home. Well, she sent him back for her luggage when she heard you was willing for her to stop here. And he told me what was up and that she said she didn't want no clothes. What was I to think from that, Governor? I ask you, as a parent, what was I to think?
So you came to rescue her from worse than death, eh?
Just so, Governor. That's right.
But why did you bring her luggage if you intended to take her away?
Have I said a word about taking her away? Have I now?
Well, you're going to take her away. Double quick.
No, Governor. Don't say that. I'm not the man to stand in my girl's light. It's a career opening for her, as you might say. And...
Ah, Mrs. Pierce, this is Eliza's father. He has come to take her away. Give her to him.
No, this is a misunderstanding. Listen here.
He can't take her away, Mr. Higgins. How can he? You told me to burn her clothes.
That's right. I can't carry the girl through the streets like a blooming monkey, can I? I put it to you.
You have put it to me that you want your daughter. Take your daughter. If she has no clothes, go out and buy her some.
Where's the clothes she come in? Did I burn them? Did your missus here?
I am the housekeeper, if you please. I have sent for some clothes for your girl. When they come, you can take her away. You can wait in the kitchen. This way, please.
Listen here, Governor. You and me is men of the world, ain't we?
Oh, men of the world, are we? Yeah. You'd better go, Mrs. Pierce.
I think so. Indeed, sir.
The floor is yours, Mr. Doolittle.
I thank you, Governor. Well, the truth is, I've taken a sort of fancy to you, Governor. And if you want a girl, I'm not so set on having her back home again. But what I might be open to, an arrangement. Regarded in the light of a young woman, she's a fine, handsome girl. As a daughter, she's not worth her keep. And so I tell you straight, all I ask is my rights as a father. Well, what's a £5 note to you, Governor? And what's Eliza to me?
I think you ought to know, Doolittle, that Mr. Higgins' intentions are entirely honourable.
Of course they are, Governor. If I thought they wasn't, I'd ask 50.
Do you mean to say, you callous rascal, that you would sell your daughter for £50?
Not in a general way, I wouldn't. But to oblige a gentleman like you, I'd do a good deal, I do assure you.
Have you no morals, man?
Can't afford them, Governor. Neither could you if you was as poor as me. Not that I mean any harm, you know. But if Liza is going to have a bit out of this, why not me too?
Well, I don't know what to do, Pickering. There can be no question that, as a matter of morals, it's a positive crime to give this chap a farthing. Yet I feel a sort of rough justice in his claim.
Well, really, it seems hardly right.
Don't say that, Governor. Don't look at it that way. What am I, governors both, I ask you, what am I? I am one of the undeserving poor. That's what I am. Think of what that means to a man. It means that he's up against middle-class morality all the time. If there's anything going, and I put in for a bit of it, it's always the same story. You're undeserving, so you can't have it. But my needs is as great as the most deserving widows that ever got money out of 6 different charities in 1 week for the death of the same husband. I don't need less than a deserving man. I need more. I don't eat less hearty than him, and I drink a lot more. I want a bit of amusement, because I'm a thinking man. I want cheerfulness and a song and a band when I feel low. Well, they charge me just the same for everything as they charge the deserving. What is middle-class morality? Just an excuse for never giving me anything. I ain't pretending to be deserving. I'm undeserving, and I mean to go on being undeserving. Therefore, I ask you as 2 gentlemen not to play that game on me. Will you take advantage of a man's nature to do him out of the price of his own daughter, what he's brought up and fed and clothed by the sweat of his brow until she's grown big enough to be interesting to you 2 gentlemen? Is £5 unreasonable? I put it to you, and I leave it to you.
Pickering, if we were to take this man in hand for 3 months, he could choose between a seat in the cabinet and a popular pulpit in Wales.
What do you say to that, Doolittle?
Not me, Governor, thank you kindly. I've heard all the preachers and all the prime ministers, and I tell you, it's a dog's life any way you look at it. Undeserving poverty is my line.
Well, I suppose we must give him a fiver.
He'll make bad use of it, I'm afraid.
Not me, Governor. So help me, I won't. Don't you be afraid that I'll save it and spare it and live idle on it. There won't be a penny of it left by Monday. I'll have to go to work, same as if I'd never had it. It won't pauperise me, you bet. Just one good spree for myself and the missus, giving pleasure to ourselves and employment to others, and satisfaction to you to think it's not been throwed away. You couldn't spend it better.
This is irresistible. Let's give him 10.
No, Governor. She wouldn't have the heart to spend 10, and perhaps I shouldn't either.
Why don't you marry that missus of yours? I rather draw the line at encouraging that sort of immorality.
Tell her so, Governor. Tell her so. I'm willing. It's me that suffers by it. I've got no hold on her. I've got to be agreeable to her. I've got to give her presents. I've got to buy her clothes, something sinful. I'm a slave to that woman, Governor, just because I'm not her lawful husband. Take my advice, Governor. Marry Eliza while she's young and don't know no better.
Pickering, if we listen to this man another minute, we shall have no convictions left. £5, I think you said.
Thank you kindly, Governor.
You're sure you won't take 10?
Not now. Another time, Governor.
Here you are.
Thank you, Governor. Good morning.
Oh!
Beg pardon, miss.
Go on! Don't you know your own daughter?
Blimey! It's Eliza!
What's this?
By Jove!
Well, I never thought she'd clean up as good-looking as that, Governor. She's a credit to me, ain't she?
I tell you, it's easy to clean up here. Hot and cold water on tap, just as much as you like there is. Woolly towels there is, soft brushes to scrub yourself, and a wooden bowl of soap smelling like primroses. Now, I know why ladies are so clean. Washing's a treat for them. Wish they saw what it is for the like of me.
I'm glad the bathroom met with your approval.
It didn't. Not all of it. I don't care who hears me say it. Mrs. Pierce knows.
What was wrong, Mrs. Pierce?
Oh, nothing, sir. It doesn't matter.
I had a good mind to break it. Didn't know which way to look, but hung a towel over it, I did.
Over what?
Over the looking glass, sir.
Doolittle, you brought your daughter up too strictly.
Me? I never brought her up at all, except to give her a lick of strap now and again. Don't put it on me, Governor. She ain't accustomed to it, you see. That's all. But she'll soon pick up your free and easy ways.
Oh, I'm a good girl, I am, and I won't pick up no free and easy ways.
Eliza, if you say again that you are a good girl, your father shall take you home.
Not him, you don't know my father. All he come here for was to touch a piece of money to get drunk on.
Don't you give me none of your lip! And don't let me hear you giving this gentleman any of it neither, or you'll hear from me about it, see? Afternoon, gentlemen. Afternoon, ma'am.
Don't you believe the old liar. You won't see him again in a hurry. He's a disgrace to me, he is, collecting dust instead of working at his trade.
What is his trade, Eliza?
Well, his proper trade's a navvy, and he works at it sometimes too. Ain't you going to call me Miss Doolittle anymore?
Oh, I beg your pardon, Miss Doolittle. It was a slip of the tongue.
Oh, I don't mind. Only it sounded so genteel. I should just like to take a taxi to the corner of Tottenham Court Road and get out there and tell it to wait for me, just to put the girls in their place a bit. I wouldn't speak to them, you know.
Better wait till we get you something really fashionable.
Oh.
Besides, you shouldn't cut your old friends now that you've risen in the world. That's what we call snobbery.
Well, they've took it out of me often enough with their ridicule when they had the chance. And now I mean to get a bit of me own back. But if I'm to wear fashionable clothes, I'll wait.
Now, Eliza, the new things have come for you to try on.
Oh!
Oh! Don't rush about like that, girl!
Pickering, we have taken on a stiff job.
Higgins, we have.
Say your alphabet.
I know my alphabet. Do you think I know nothing? I don't need to be taught like a child.
Say your alphabet.
Say it, Miss Doolittle. You will understand presently. Do what he tells you, and let him teach you in his own way.
Oh, well, if you put it like that... A, B, C, D...
Oh, stop! Oh, listen to this, Pickering. This is what we pay for as elementary education. This unfortunate animal has been locked up for 9 years in school at our expense to teach her to speak and read the language of Shakespeare and Milton. And the result is... I, by, si, di. Say A, B, C, D.
But I'm saying it! A, B, C...
Stop! No. Say a cup of tea.
A cup of tea?
Put your tongue forward until it squeezes against the top of your lower teeth. Mm. Top of your lower teeth. Mm. Now say cup.
I can't. Cup.
Good. Splendid, Miss Doolittle.
By Jupiter, she's done it at the first shot. Pickering, we shall make a duchess of her. Now, do you think you can possibly say tea? Not tie, mind. If you ever say I, by, say, day again, you should be dragged round the room 3 times by the hair of your head. Right? Tea, 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 tea.
I can't hear no difference, except it sounds more genteel like when you say it.
Well, if you can hear that difference, what the devil are you crying for? Oh, be off with it to Mrs. Pierce and tell her about it. Another lesson at 4:30 this afternoon. Go away with you.
Of Telford and Hampshire.
Tay.
Arrogance.
Tay.
Hardly ever. Tay. The rain in the plain. No. The rain in Spain.
Spain.
Stays mainly in the plain.
Stays mainly in the clay.
Of tea. Tea.
The
tea.
Rain in
tea.
Spain stays mainly in the plain.
Henry, what are you doing here today? It's my at-home day. You promised not to come. Go home at once.
I know, Mother. I came on purpose.
But you mustn't. I'm serious, Henry. You offend all my friends. They stop coming whenever they meet you.
Oh, nonsense. I know I have no small talk, but people don't mind.
Oh, don't they? Small talk, indeed. What about your large talk? Really, dear, you mustn't stay.
I must. I have a job for you. A phonetic job. I've picked up a girl.
Does that mean that some girl has picked you up?
Not at all. I don't mean a love affair.
What a pity.
I can't be bothered with young women. My idea of a lovable woman is somebody as like you as possible.
Tell me about the girl.
She's coming to see you.
I don't remember asking her.
No, you didn't. I asked her. If you'd known her, you wouldn't have asked her.
Indeed? Why?
Well, it's like this. She's a common flower girl. I picked her off the curbstone.
And invited her to my at-home?
Oh, that'll be all right. I've taught her to speak properly, and she has strict orders as to her behaviour. Oh. She's to keep to two subjects, the weather and everybody's health. Fine day, and how do you do, you know, and not to let herself go on things in general. Yes, that will be safe.
Safe? To talk about our health and our insides? Perhaps about our outsides. How could you be so silly, Henry?
Well, she must talk about something. Oh, she'll be all right. Don't you fuss. Pickering is in it with me. I've a sort of bet on that I'll pass her off as a duchess in 6 months. I started on her some months ago, and, oh, she's getting on like a house on fire. I shall win my bet. She has a quick ear, and she's been easier to teach than my middle-class pupils, because she's had to learn a complete new language. She talks English almost as you talk French.
That's satisfactory at all events.
Well, it is and it isn't.
What does that mean?
Well, you see, I've got her pronunciation all right, but you have to consider not only how a girl pronounces, but what she pronounces, and that's where I want your... Oh.
Mrs. and Miss Eynsford Hill.
Oh, Lord!
How do you do?
How do you do?
My son, Henry.
Oh, your celebrated son. I have so longed to meet you, Professor Higgins.
Delighted.
How do you do?
Well, I've seen you before somewhere. I haven't a ghost of a notion where, but I've heard your voice. No, it doesn't matter. You better sit down.
I'm sorry to say that my celebrated son has no manners. You mustn't mind him.
I don't.
Oh, have I been rude? No, I didn't mean to be.
Colonel Pickering.
How do you do, Mrs. Higgins?
So glad you've come. Do you know Mrs. Eynsford Hill? Miss Eynsford Hill?
Has Henry told you what we've come for?
We were interrupted, damn it.
Oh, Henry, Henry, really?
Are we in the way?
No, no. You couldn't have come more fortunately. We want you to meet a friend of ours.
Yes, by George. We want two or three people. And you'll do as well as anybody else.
Mr. Eynsford Hill.
God of heaven, another of them.
Hard to do.
Very good of you to come. Colonel Pickering?
Hard to do.
I don't think you know my son, Professor Higgins.
Hard to do.
I'll take my oath I've met you before somewhere. Where was it?
I don't think so.
No, it don't matter anyhow. Sit down. Well, here we are. Anyhow. And now what the devil are we going to talk about until Eliza comes?
Henry, you are the life and soul of the Royal Society's soirees, but really you're rather trying on more commonplace occasions.
Am I? Very sorry. I suppose I am, you know.
I sympathise. I haven't any small talk. If people would only be frank and say what they really think...
Oh, Lord forbid.
But why?
Look, what they think they ought to think is bad enough, Lord knows. But what they really think would break up the whole show. You see, we're all savages, more or less.
Henry.
Miss Doolittle.
Oh, here she is, Mother.
How do you do, Mrs. Higgins? Mr. Higgins told me I might come.
Quite right. I'm very glad indeed to see you.
How do you do, Miss Doolittle?
Colonel Pickering, is it not?
I feel sure we've met before, Miss Doolittle. I remember your eyes.
How do you do?
My daughter, Clara.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Well, I've certainly had the pleasure.
My son, Freddie.
How do you do?
Oh, by George, yes, it all comes back to me. Covent Garden. What a damn thing.
Henry, please.
All right.
Will it rain, do you think?
The shallow depression in the west of these islands is likely to move slowly in an easterly direction. There are no indications of any great change in the barometrical situation.
How awfully funny.
What is wrong with that, young man? I bet I got it right.
Killing.
I'm sure I hope it won't turn cold. There's so much influenza about. It runs right through our whole family regularly every spring.
My aunt died of influenza, so they said.
Goodness.
but it's my belief they'd done the old woman in.
Done her in?
Yes, Lord love you. Why should she die of influenza? She come through diphtheria right enough the year before. I saw her with my own eyes. Fairly blue with it, she was. They all thought she was dead, but my father, he kept ladling gin down her throat till she came to so sudden that she bit the bowl off the spoon.
Dear me.
What call would a woman with that strength in her have to die of influenza? What become of her new straw hat that should have come to me? Somebody pinched it, and what I say is, them as pinched it done her in.
What does doing her in mean?
Oh, that's the new small talk. To do a person in means to kill them.
You surely don't believe that your aunt was killed?
Do I not? Them she lived with would have killed her for a hat pin, let alone a hat.
But it can't have been right for your father to pour spirits down her throat like that. It might have killed her.
Not her. Gin was mother's milk to her. Besides, he'd poured so much down his own throat that he knew the good of it.
Do you mean that he drank?
Drank? My word, something chronic.
How dreadful for you.
Not a bit. It never did him no harm what I could see. But then he did not keep it up regular. And always more agreeable when he had a drop in. There's lots of women has to make their husbands drunk to make them fit to live with. Here, what are you sniggering at?
Oh, the new small talk. You do it so awfully well.
If I was doing it proper, what was you laughing at? Have I said anything I want?
Not at all, Miss Doolittle.
Well, that's a mercy. Anyhow, what I always say is... well, I must go. So pleased to have met you. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, Colonel Pickering.
Goodbye, Miss Doolittle.
Goodbye, all.
Are you walking across the park, Miss Doolittle? If so...
Walk? Not bloody likely. I am going in a taxi.
I really can't get used to the new ways.
Oh, it's all right, Mama. People will think we never go anywhere or see anybody if you are so old-fashioned.
I dare say I am very old-fashioned. But I do hope you won't begin using that expression, Clara.
Well, I find the new small talk delightful and quite innocent.
Well, after that, I think it's time for us to go.
Oh, yes. We have three at-homes to go to still. Goodbye, Mrs. Higgins. Goodbye, Colonel Pickering.
Goodbye.
Professor Higgins.
Yes, goodbye. Oh, be sure you try on that small talk at the three at-homes. Don't be nervous about it. Pitch it in strong.
I will. Goodbye. Such nonsense, all this early Victorian prudery. Oh,
such damned nonsense.
Such bloody nonsense.
Well, goodbye.
Goodbye. Would you like to meet Miss Doolittle again?
Oh, yes, I should, most awfully.
Well, you know my days.
Yes. Thanks awfully. Goodbye.
Well, is Eliza presentable?
You silly boy, of course she's not presentable. She's a triumph of your art and of her dressmakers. But if you suppose for a moment that she doesn't give herself away in every sentence she utters, you must be perfectly cracked about her.
But don't you think something might be done? I mean, something to eliminate the sanguinary element from her conversation?
Not as long as she's in Henry's hands.
Oh, well, I suppose I don't always talk like a bishop.
Colonel Pickering, will you tell me what is the exact state of things in Wimpole Street? Where does this girl live?
Well, with us, of course. Where would she live?
But on what terms? Is she a servant? If not, what is she?
I think I know what you mean, Mrs. Higgins. Well, dash me if I do. I've had to work at the girl every day for months to get her to her present pitch. Besides, she's useful.
She knows where my things are and remembers my appointments and so forth.
How does your housekeeper get on with her?
Mrs. Pierce? Well, she's got some silly bee in her bonnet about Eliza. She keeps saying, "You don't think, sir," doesn't she, Pick?
Yes, that's the formula. "You don't think, sir." That's the end of every conversation about Eliza.
As if I ever stop thinking about the girl and her confounded vowels and consonants. Oh, I'm worn out thinking about her and watching her lips and her teeth and her tongue, not to mention her soul, which is the quaintest of the lot.
You certainly are a pretty pair of babies playing with your live doll.
Playing? The hardest job I ever tackled, Mother. Make no mistake about that. Oh, but you have no idea how frightfully interesting it is to take a human being and change her into a quite different human being by creating a new speech for her. It's filling up the deepest gulf that separates class from class and soul from soul.
Yes, it's enormously interesting, I assure you, Mrs. Higgins. We take Eliza very seriously. We keep records of every stage, dozens of gramophone discs and photographs.
Yes, and by George, it's the most absorbing experiment I ever tackled. She regularly fills our lives up, doesn't she, Pick?
We're always talking Eliza.
Teaching Eliza.
Dressing Eliza.
What?
Inventing new Elizas. Do you know, she has the most extraordinary
I assure you,
quickness
Mrs. Higgins,
of ear.
Be never quiet, been... Henry. Colonel Pickering, don't you realise that when Eliza walked into Wimpole Street, something walked in with her?
The problem of how to pass her off as a lady.
Yeah, I'll solve that problem. I've half solved it already.
No, you two infinitely stupid male creatures. The problem of what is to be done with her afterwards.
Well, I don't see anything in that. She can go her own way, with all the advantages I've given her.
She's happy enough. Don't you worry about her. Goodbye.
Anyhow, there's no good bothering now. Thing's done. Goodbye, Mother.
There are plenty of openings. We'll do what's right. Goodbye.
Let's take her to the Shakespeare exhibition at Earl's Court.
Yes, that's... Her remarks will be delicious.
She'll mimic all the people for us when we get her ripping.
Oh, men, men, men.
In episode 1 of Pygmalion by George Bernard Shaw, Higgins was played by Alistair McGowan, Pickering by Hugh Fraser, and Eliza by Morgana Robinson. Doolittle was played by Al Murray, Mrs. Pierce by Charlotte Page, and Mrs. Higgins by Sian Phillips. Mrs. Ainsford Hill was played by Georgie Glenn, Clara by Maeve Bluebell Wells, and Freddie by Tom Forrester. All other parts were played by David Sturzaker, David Stern, and John Dougal. Pygmalion was adapted and directed for radio by Emma Harding.